Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, August 30, 2020. Obituaries. Charlotte Jean C. Charlotte Jean C., age 80, went to be with the Lord on August 20, 2020 in Austin, Texas. Her loving family shared their love and goodbyes before her passing. Charlotte was born in Abilene, Texas, April 13, 1940, to Imogen and Charles Craig. She married John R. C. in March 1964. She and John resided in Midland until moving to Austin in 2016. Charlotte had a passion for many things in life, including art, travel, food, music, family, friends, and faith. Charlotte was a published author, a distinguished artist, and lived her life in full color. She was known for her vibrant watercolor presentations. Her art is on display in public and private collections around the world. Charlotte was the past president of the Texas Watercolor Society, Midland Arts Association, and the 1997 Distinguished Artist for the Celebration of the Arts. She is especially known for her bold and striking paintings of flowers, fish, and natural habitats. One of her paintings, a beautiful hibiscus motif, is featured on the label of Messina Hoff Wines. The co-founder of Messina Hoff Winery said, "This is one of the most stunning labels we have had." A favorite accomplishment of Charlotte's was traveling to Liverpool, England, where she curated an art exhibit with United States and United Kingdom artists. The pinnacle of her art career was the 2007 exhibition of her paintings at the Museum of the Southwest. Charlotte was quoted as saying, "To have a Midland artist show in the Museum of the Southwest is like singing in Carnegie Hall." Over the course of Charlotte's life in Midland, she devoted time to many charitable organizations and philanthropies, including MARC, High Sky Girls Ranch, Midland College, and the City of Midland Development Council. She served as an elder in the Presbyterian Church. One of Charlotte's greatest joys was her family. Charlotte and John's children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren enjoyed family gatherings in past years at their homes in Midland and on Lake LBJ, where food and water sports were a great pleasure. She was an accomplished cook and entertainer, hosting many gatherings in her home. Charlotte loved life and especially enjoyed the lifelong friendships she made not only with Midlanders, but with others from around the world through her many travels. Charlotte will be dearly missed by her devoted and loving husband, John R. C. of Austin, children, Daniel C. and wife Cheryl of Spicewood, Sam C., predeceased, of Gulfport, Mississippi, Stephen C. and wife Annie of Katy, Sherry Smith and husband David of Trinidad, Scott C. and partner Joshua Dunning of Houston. Brothers, Ron Craig and wife Joyce of Louisville, Kentucky, Coy Craig and wife Lynn of Roy City, Ted Craig and wife Susan of LaRue. Grandchildren, Crystal Meadows and husband Jeff of Spicewood, Austin C. and wife Holly of Austin, Dustin Smith and wife Keisha of Fort Worth, Cameron Smith and wife Christina of Odessa, Abby C. of Katy, great-grandchildren Victoria and Allison C. of Austin, Ketta and Keelan Smith of Fort Worth, Stella and Wilder Meadows of Spicewood, niece Lee Ellen Danley and husband Brian, son Maxwell of Dallas. A celebration of Charlotte's life will be held at a later date. Memorial donations may be made to the Museum of the Southwest, 1705 West Missouri, Midland, Texas, 79701. Dawn Marie Witten Howard. Dawn Marie Witten Howard of Midland passed away on Sunday, May 3, 2020, surrounded by her family. The September 19, 2020 scheduled celebration of Dawn's life has been temporarily postponed due to the ongoing pandemic. We will reschedule the service at the earliest available date when we feel we can safely gather to celebrate Dawn's life. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Enrique Buelo Solis. Enrique Buelo S. Solis, 91, of McCamey, Texas, passed away on Thursday, August 27, 2020, at Medical Center Hospital. Enrique was a longtime resident of McCamey and worked in the oil field for many years. He had a green thumb for gardening. Anything that he touched was guaranteed to bloom. He is survived by his loving wife, Martha Solis of Mikemi, sons Enrique, Hector, Joel, Sylvia, Jorge, Lisa, Joe, America, and Robert Solis, daughters Juanita, Maureen, Hector, Marisela Lopez, Eddie, Olga Navarrete, Juan, Sally Solis, James, grandchildren, Renee, Rinda, Yadira, Ricky, Chris, Gabriel, Nikki, Erica, Casey, Jorge Jr., Amy, Eric, Nathan, Amaris, Derek, Ethan, Simber, Celeste, Celine, Mark, Cedric, JR, Jasmine, Mercedes, Layla, Maya Sofia, Alisa, and 36 great-grandchildren. Rosary will be on Monday, August 31, 2020 at 9:30 a.m. at Avalos Sanchez Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church in Midland, Texas, with burial following at Rest Haven Memorial Park, where he will be laid to rest. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Patricia Pat Cruz. Patricia Pat Cruz, 87, of Fredericksburg, Texas, passed away peacefully in Burney, Texas. She was born in Houston, Texas, the daughter of Roderick and Margaret Patton. She graduated from Milby High School in Houston and then attended the University of Texas at Austin. She graduated from the university in May of 1954 with a BA in economics. While at the university, Pat met Raleigh Cruz, who became her college sweetheart, fiancé, and husband. Pat was an active volunteer in the Episcopal churches she attended throughout her life. She was also a school volunteer mentoring young children and a hospital volunteer caring for those in need. Pat was a lifelong member of the Alpha Delta Pi sorority, served as an ROTC sponsor, and was also a member of the Daughters of the American Revolution. In addition to raising three children and managing a household, Pat aspired to become a petroleum landman. After her children were grown, Pat worked diligently for several oil companies in Midland and Houston before finally achieving her dream of being promoted to landman. Pat also had a love of literature, music, the arts, and the Texas Hill Country. Pat and Raleigh fulfilled their dream of owning a ranch in the Texas Hill Country in 1989. They were blessed to be able to live on their dream property just north of Fredericksburg for almost 30 years. Pat is preceded in death by her husband, Raleigh, of 63 years. She is survived by her three children, Charles Patton Cruz, Jan of Palm Coast, Florida, James Roderick Cruz, Tanya, of Burney, Texas, and Ann Lishan Cruz Carr, Paul, of Hartsville, South Carolina. She is also survived by eight grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. A memorial service for Pat is pending and will be scheduled as and when it is deemed safe to do so. In lieu of flowers, contributions can be made to St. Barnabas Episcopal Church, 601 West Creek Drive, Fredericksburg, Texas, 78624, or Alamo Hospice, 1595 South Main, Suite 101, Burney, Texas, 78006. To leave condolences for the family, visit www.ebensberger-fisher.com. Arrangements with Ebensberger Fisher Funeral Home of Burney. Rosa Lisa Gallegos. Rosa Lisa Gallegos, age 50, passed away in Midland, Texas on August 26, 2020. She was born and raised in Midland, Texas. Rosa was a strong-willed, hard-working woman with a heart of gold. She loved to cook and would go all out for the holidays. She was a huge Dallas Cowboys fan that enjoyed football. She would dress up for any occasion or even just to stay home. Ochi was fun, loving, and forgiving. But above all, she always saw the good in everyone. She was always willing to help in any way she could. She will be remembered for having a kind, loving soul. She will be missed dearly. She is survived by her two daughters, Valerie Wall, 25, and Serena Bill, 20, granddaughter Zaria Hernandez, 5, siblings Janie Sotelo, Robert Bill, George Bill Jr., Raymond Bill, Mary Bill, and Paul Bill. Also, many nieces and nephews. She is preceded in death by her father, George Bill, mother Frances Bill Morales, and brother Joe Bill. There will be an evening prayer service rosary on Sunday, August 30, 2020, at 7 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. There will be a memorial service on Monday, August 31, 2020, at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Death notices. Kathleen Mary Bear. Kathleen Mary Bear passed from this life on August 22, 2020. She was born on April 24, 1963, in Clinton, Massachusetts, to Mary Giard and the late Lionel Giard. She is survived by her husband, Donald J. Bear, Jr., children, Michael B. Bear and Corey L. Giard, mother, Mary Giard, two sisters. A memorial service will be held Tuesday, September 1, 2020, 1 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 30th, 2020. Obituaries and death notices for Sunday, August 30th. Michael John Gazella, Cedar Park. Michael John Gazella passed away August 26th at the age of 93. He was born in New York, August 16, 1927, to Mike and Margaret Gazella. He married Carol Sullivan in 1957. Dad was preceded in death by his wife, his parents, and his sister Martha Baird. Surviving him are two daughters, Teresa Gazella of Leander, and Martha Gazella Taylor of Austin, and husband Jack, as well as two grandchildren. He will lie in state Monday, August 31st, from 2 to 4 p.m. at Weed Corley Fish Funeral Home in Leander. A funeral mass will take place Tuesday, September 1st at 12 noon at St. Margaret Mary Catholic Church. Graveside services with military honors will take place Thursday, September 3rd at 11 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa, where he will be laid to rest next to his wife. Rita Jean Mabry. Rita Jean Mabry, 68, of Odessa, passed away at her home August 27th. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, August 31st, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Rita was born November 16, 1951, in Kermit, to W.L. and Willie Mae Lisenby. She married Bruce Wayne Mabry in 1971 in Kermit. Rita is preceded in death by her parents, W.L. and Willie Mae Lisenby, her in-laws, Robert and Winona Mabry, brother Travis Lisenby, sister-in-law Jean Lisenby, and brother-in-law Carol Allen Fulton. She is survived by her husband of 49 years, Bruce Mabry, her daughter, Kimberly, and husband Chris Carroll, daughter Lindsay Little, three grandchildren, her sister and brother-in-law Linda and Terry Youngblood, sister and brother-in-law Thena and George Anderson, brother Jerry Lisenby, sister Patsy Fulton, sister-in-law and husband Bobwina and Ken Phillips, sister-in-law and husband Judy and Gerald Pierce, sister-in-law Gloria Clark, and many nieces and nephews. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Melvin D. Harris. Melvin D. Harris, Sr., 84, of Gardendale, passed away Sunday, August 23rd. Melvin was born January 4, 1936, in Okmulgee, Oklahoma, to Roy and Letha Owen Harris. he married Jeannie K. Hamlin in 2005 in Andrews. Melvin is preceded in death by his wife, Mary Jane Yeader Harris, of 40 years. His parents, sisters Ethel Clay and Esther Harris, and brothers Verl Harris and Ernie Harris. He is survived by his wife, Jeannie, of Gardendale, sons Stephen J. Harris of Oklahoma, Melvin D. Harris Jr. of Kerrville, Ori Lee Harris of Brownwood, and Melton D. Harris of Kerrville, sisters Esther Welcher and Irma McFarland of Oklahoma, brothers Leon D. Harris and Joe Harris, and Kelly Harris, all of Oklahoma, 8 grandchildren and 13 great-grandchildren. Final arrangements entrusted to McNett Funeral Home. Death notices. Kathleen Mary Giard Bayer. Kathleen Mary Giard Bayer, 57, of Midland, died Saturday, August 22nd. A celebration of life is scheduled for 1 p.m. September 1st at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Cipriano R. Ramirez. Cipriano R. Ramirez, 75, of Odessa, died Wednesday, August 26th. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. September 1st at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section, with Father Tony Franco officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Louise Jernigan Blacknall. Louise Jernigan Blacknall, 91, died Saturday, August 29th in Crane. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Norma Jean Fisher. Norma Jean Fisher, 82, of Lubbock, died Thursday, August 27th. A celebration of life is scheduled for 1 p.m. September 1st at King Ridge Church of Christ in Lubbock. Arrangements are by Rest Haven Funeral Home of Lubbock. Annalicia Ubaye Franco. Annalicia Ubaye Franco, 20, of Odessa, died Friday, August 21st. Mass will be celebrated August 31st at Holy Redeemer Church at 11 a.m. Burial will be in the Odessa 2 Gardens section of Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Bobby Gale, Bob Hudnall. Bobby Gale, Bob Hudnall, 87, of Odessa, died Wednesday, August 26th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Sherry Jan Frazier Johnson. Sherry Jan Frazier Johnson, 71, of Odessa, died Wednesday, August 26th. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Charlotte Ann Roberson. Charlotte Ann Roberson, 76, of Seagraves, died Thursday, August 27th in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. September 1st at First Baptist Church of Seagraves. Burial will be in Gaines County Cemetery in Seagraves with Reverend L.D. Hinson and Reverend Dan Reynolds officiating. Arrangements are by Ratliff Funeral Home of Seagraves.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 30th, 2020. Opinion. Our view. Healing continues in Odessa. The point. Thank a first responder and hug your family just a little longer in wake of the anniversary of Odessa's mass shooting. And be still for 32 seconds on Monday. The one thing that many of us have heard during the last week or so is, I can't believe it has been a year. An entire year since Odessa and Midland were rocked by the senseless tragedy caused by a deranged gunman. 7 people were killed and 25 others injured after Seth Attar took to the streets of Odessa and parts of Midland, shooting at random people before law enforcement shot him to death near Synergy Theater. It is still stunning to know that this type of thing happens anywhere, but especially here. How anyone could set out to harm random people, including children, is almost beyond comprehension. What good can ever come from an act of evil? There were so many that day who selflessly put themselves in harm's way to help others. There were so many first responders and civilians who jumped into action to try and aid those who were injured. During the last week, we've heard story after story about the unnamed cop or fireman or good citizen who jumped into action when help was needed. And help didn't just come on August 31st, 2019, the day of the shootings. Help has come over and over through fundraisers and blood drives and memorials. None of that can ever bring back a lost loved one or erase the trauma of an injury from that dark day, but it does show the love of a community for others and the desire to help others through a terrible ordeal. Many events have been planned to commemorate the day and to honor those who were killed or injured. That includes a moment of silence on Monday. Organizers are asking Odessans to be still for 32 seconds at 3 p.m. You can also still hang a yellow ribbon to show support. We thank everyone who has taken the time to come up with a way to honor the victims. Everything from a quilting group making quilts to the yellow flags at Memorial Gardens Park to honor them. There are many, many ways that folks are being remembered. Remembering is a very important part of healing. We're glad to see a memorial will take shape at the Memorial Gardens Park, hopefully during the next year. It's another way to remember and to honor those lost. Public donations will help fund the memorial project. Find more information at odessaarts.org. Guest Views. 1 year later, we mourn and we remember. By Colonel August Pfluger. A year ago, a deeply troubled man embarked upon a horrifying shooting spree that claimed the lives of 7 of our neighbors and injured 25 others. We never thought it could happen here, but on that day, the kind of senseless violence we usually associate with somewhere far away was tragically visited upon our quiet West Texas community. The events of August 31st, 2019 will remain forever etched in our history and inscribed in our collective consciousness. As we mark this terrible anniversary, we lift up those we lost, we pray for healing and recovery of the wounded, and endeavor to move forward with hope in our hearts. We are family, and the loss of any one of us is felt by all of us. As tragic as that day was, it's worth acknowledging the actions of our fellow citizens who bravely intervened to prevent an even greater loss of life. As the shooter rampaged for more than an hour, firing randomly at innocent Texans, it became clear that he would not be stopped unless and until someone made the choice to stop him. We all owe an unpayable debt to the brave police officers, sheriff's deputies, and Texas state troopers who pursued the shooter that day, cornered him, and ultimately ended his senseless rampage of violence. Selflessly, they risked mortal danger to protect us from harm. Several were seriously wounded. And yet, less than a year removed from this tragedy, we see cities across the nation turning their backs on our bravest and finest. As liberal city leaders surrender to the outrageous demands of their radical base and push to defund the police, it begs the question, have we already forgotten the sacrifices made by our men and women in uniform? Have we turned our backs on the brave officers who risk their lives every day to keep us safe? Recently, the city of Austin slashed a third of its total law enforcement budget, quizzically arguing that defunding law enforcement will somehow make communities safer. It won't. Imagine if on that fateful day 1 year ago, a terrified community had come under attack and called out for a savior, only to have those cries go unanswered. What further tragedy might our community have endured? What if law enforcement had been hampered by lack of personnel, lack of training, lack of funding, or worst of all, lack of support from the community? How many more lives would have been lost that day? These past few months have been trying for us all. The coronavirus has changed the way we live, shuttered schools and businesses, prevented us from gathering to pray, robbed countless people of their livelihoods, and claimed far too many lives. The thriving Texas oil patch that delivers reliable energy to America and the world is hurting. Thousands have been put out of work. But we are still a community, and we still draw strength from one another. In this unique moment, our nation stands at an inflection point. Some have clearly chosen to tear at the fabric of our nation and turn their backs on those who have sworn to protect us. Some have chosen to exploit tragedies, like the one we suffered a year ago, to tear away our most basic constitutional rights. But our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are as fundamental now as they have ever been. A gunman could not rob us of that truth, and neither will this virus. As we recommit ourselves to the defense of our values, we resolve to stand with our nation, with our Constitution, and with those brave men and women in uniform that defend them both. We resolve to stand with our community, and we stand those who keep us safe. A year ago, faced with horror and tragedy, we stood united as a community, and we prevailed. Together, we will rise to meet these challenges as well. August Pfluger is the Republican nominee for the Texas 11 congressional seat. August Pfluger. Remember Those Who Answered the Call by Matthew Thompson, Odessa High School Student Council. August 31st, 2020, marks the one-year anniversary of personal pain and tragedy for the people of West Texas. To the family of those we've lost a year ago, and to all who called them friends, we mourn for your loss, for your loss as a member of our family. A day that shall be reserved for the reflection of the many beloved victims of this terribly indescribable event. The memory of innocent lives that had names, homes, and a wonderful spirit will not be forgotten. Their lives represent the commonality in all of us normal, hardworking, and loving people, including a gracefully young individual who is endeared by students. Our hearts are consumed with sorrow, yet are filled with hope and thanks for the many that were in harm's path and were affected by injury that survived. Today we also remember the first responders who went above the call of duty when imminent danger posed a threat to crucial safety. To each woman and man that put their life on hold to protect the life of our community, we are especially grateful. What is taken into consideration as an obligation goes beyond the sense of duty and purpose of the witnessed incredible heroism of our officers and healthcare workers. West Texas is often characterized by its arid features and warm sunsets. However, profoundly, it is our culture that is epitomized across the Permian Basin that defines us, an interconnection of cities compassionate for the well-being of each other. This same devotion was graciously delivered by the people of West Texas, committed to the ideal of uplifting a friend when darkness has seemed to become pervasive and positivity rare. Restoring the broken vision of a city left in distraught, availed by the immense support of local communities. This idea is instilled amongst the people of West Texas, the vision of hope that unites and carries us together even in our deepest despair. Kind generosity will always overcome adversity, even in the toughest test of time. Let us be reminded by this testament of the power of a culture that is perpetually devoted to offering support and guidance to one another when in need, that these influential efforts are not in vain and ultimately revitalizes the strength of our community and makes West Texas stronger. Tragedy Brought Odessa, Midland Together by David Turner. August 31st, 2019 began, like many Saturdays in Odessa, with the excitement of children ready to enjoy a few days out of school and parents excited to spend time with their families. Unfortunately, that cherished time was cut short by the sound of gunfire. In a little over an hour, the Permian Basin was left with 25 injured, including 3 first responders, 1 DPS trooper, 1 Midland police officer, and 1 Odessa police officer. Odessa was left with over 20 crime scenes from the shooting spree that spanned over 20 miles. Tragically, 7 people were killed. At a time when we saw the very worst of humanity, we also saw many examples of the very best. We were offered support from the White House, U.S. Congress, Governor Abbott, and the Texas Congress. We also received support from mayors across the country, especially mayors from Texas, including El Paso, Dallas, San Antonio, and others. I heard someone say Odessa and Midland are like 2 brothers. Sometimes they are the best of friends, and sometimes they quarrel, as brothers will. But when push comes to shove, they will stand shoulder to shoulder and defend each other to the end. West Texas truly became one on that fateful day. I would like to say thanks to former Mayor Morales from Midland and also Sheriff Mike Griffiths, the Midland Police Department, Midland Fire Department, Midland Sheriff Department, UTPB Police Department, ECISD Police Department, OC and Medical Center Police Departments, and state and federal law enforcement. We witnessed brave first responders running toward the danger, our citizens running to help someone they didn't even know, and our doctors and nurses going to the hospital just to help. We saw citizens protecting other citizens by bringing food to the first responders, donating blood, and most importantly, citizens praying for each other. We could not have made it through that time without the churches coming together to pray and serve the community. The job the first responders did was extraordinary. The selfless sacrifices made by our local heroes helped to save innocent lives. This event was something that our first responders had trained for and performed to the highest level of professionalism. As mayor and the amazing city council, we could not be prouder of the Odessa Police Department, Odessa Fire and Rescue Department, and our dispatchers who handled all of the 911 calls. There were a few individuals who were vital in keeping Odessa moving through this event that need to be recognized, including City Manager Michael Marrero, OFR Chief Alvarez, OPD Chief Gerke, and PIO Devin Sanchez. I want to share some things I shared during the community prayer vigil that still ring true 1 year later. West Texans are strong and independent and known for our friendliness, a whatever-it-takes spirit. The next few days and weeks will be difficult, but with that strength and whatever-it-takes spirit, we show this community, this state, and the nation what it means to be West Texans. We will make it through this tragedy. For all of the victims that day, all that is left for us, the living, to do is honor them, take care of them, and rededicate ourselves to cherish the freedoms that our citizens were enjoying when they gave the last full measure of devotion. For those we lost, Rodolfo Julio Arco, Cameron Brown, Raul Garcia, Mary Granados, Joe Griffith, Layla Hernandez, and Edwin Peregrino. May the road rise up to meet you. May the wind always be at your back. May the sunshine warm your face, the rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Irish blessing. To the citizens of Odessa, we will get through this tragedy by moving forward one day at a time, one week at a time, one month at a time, and one year at a time, and most importantly, one prayer at a time. We will show our beloved state and nation what it means to be Permian Basin strong. May God bless Odessa, Midland, Texas, and America. David Turner is mayor of Odessa.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, August 30, 2020. Viewpoints. Inclusions of Lee tend to amount to maintaining status quo. Dr. John Thurman, Lee graduate. As a child, I knew I would be a Lee Rebel football player. I remember Tyrone Thurman and the team that went to the 1983 state championship. I was in Ratliff Stadium during the actual Friday Night Lights game. In junior high, my best friend and I rode our bicycles 12 miles round trip to attend the Rebel football camp. I did everything I could to become a Rebel football player. That same focus motivated me as a student and violinist. I wanted to demonstrate excellence in everything I did. In my young eyes, exactly what a Rebel was. One week before the 1994 season, I destroyed my ACL. I missed the entire season while recuperating from knee surgery. I dedicated myself to return better than ever to help my team. Senior year arrived, and I wore the Lee Rebel jersey alongside my brothers. With our new coach, John Parchman, we took a storied high school football team and laid the foundation that would elevate the program in coming years. After graduation from Lee, I went to West Point to play Army football. I was the biggest supporter of Rebel football that West Point had ever seen. I would host listening parties during playoff games in my barracks room. It became a joke. Johnny Thurm and his love for Rebel football. I attended the 1998 state championship game. I felt absolute elation. Our hard work had paid off. There is no one with more pride for Midland Lee Rebel football than I. With all of that said, I absolutely support the Midland Independent School District Board's decision to change the name of Robert E. Lee High School. Furthermore, I strongly believe that the school should move entirely away from the name Lee and all iterations thereof. Any inclusions of Lee, family, other people named Lee, the Rebel mascot, etc., are tantamount to maintaining the status quo. That uniform and the Lee name meant everything to me. I sacrificed, I bled, I did everything I could to be a Lee Rebel. But it is time for a change. I also graduated from West Point, Lee's alma mater and a major source of his veneration. I learned about him in my military studies. I learned about the real Robert E. Lee. He is not a person that our next generation should idolize. West Point is working to remove his likeness and any reverence to him. His actual historical importance in its proper context in the teachings of a military institution will be maintained, but he will not be idolized. Benedict Arnold was a traitor to the United States, just as Lee was. There are no high schools named after Arnold, to my knowledge. Lee was not from Midland. He was not even from Texas. He was a traitor to the United States that we chose to idolize via Lee High School. If the intent was not racism, then why are there no Benedict Arnold high schools? Some argue that removing names and symbols is tantamount to erasing history. This could not be further from the truth. I have heard of former players saying a name change erases history. No, it does not. What we have accomplished at our school will not change nor be diminished. All our successes will continue to stand in history. The Lee name change closes an early chapter of our school and begins a new chapter in the legacy of our city. Lee was not only a racist and a slave owner. He was a traitor. He betrayed his country to defend the subjugation of the black race. Those who chose the name Robert E. Lee for our high school, years after Brown v. Board of Education, 1954, chose to believe a comfortable, watered-down, revisionist version of our national history. I have thought long and hard about my feelings regarding Lee. I strongly believe our school will continue to enjoy success. This time, it will be under a new name that is not exclusionary to a large portion of the student population. The history of successes our school has enjoyed in academics, athletics, music, and many other activities will live on. My feelings toward the name of Lee High School have changed through the years due to my understanding of the truly negative effects Robert E. Lee had on our country. I have grown to understand that I accepted, blindly, the realities of systemic racism in our country. I was wrong to support and embrace casual racism. I was wrong to be indifferent toward the name of Robert E. Lee High School. I have grown. I have made progress. Together, we can continue to make progress in the city of Midland for our next generation. Progress takes away what forever took to find. John Thurman is a graduate of Lee High School and the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, and a doctor of osteopathic medicine. Strong foundation needs just that. Nancy Ivy and her son J. Anthony Ivy serve plates of food to go Thursday, as the Midland Soup Kitchen dining area is still closed to patrons. Midland Soup Kitchen needs financial help for building issues. Nancy Ivy, Midland Soup Kitchen Ministry. How to donate. We are asking for any amount of monetary donations to help with our building repairs. Here's how to donate. Mail, Midland Soup Kitchen Ministry, 1401 Orchard Lane, Midland, Texas, 79701. Hand deliver, 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. Friday, 686-7687. Midland Soup Kitchen Ministry has been serving the less fortunate community of Midland proudly each week since 1987. We provide a free, hot, home-cooked meal to anyone God sends through our doors Monday through Friday. Now we need your help. We are asking the community for donations for the expense to sustain and fix our foundation issues, a much-needed project. In the early mid-1960s, our geographical base was built on the old city dump site as a community center on East Side Midland. During the early 70s, the building was then used as Park YMCA Center for the locals. After the use of the YMCA, our facility became vacant for a long period of time, until it became Midland Soup Kitchen Ministry. Certainly, there is a lot of history connected to this building, and now it desperately needs some repair. For many years, we have sustained this facility and have provided the necessary repairs as needed, but we need your help. Our building is sinking. Our walls are separating, and our floors are uneven due to a cracked foundation underground. A big job comes with a big price tag. Our building needs lifted and underground support so that all sinking ceases. Midland Soup Kitchen Ministry's mission is to help others, but now we are the ones in need of help. $68,000 worth of foundation repairs. This has been a long time coming, but the problem is only getting worse. On average, Midland Soup Kitchen feeds 3,000 people every month, and demand has gone up due to the oil and gas industry downturn and, of course, COVID-19. Not only do we feed physically, we also make sure to feed our patrons spiritually through the Word of God. This calling came through the Word of God in John chapter 21, verse 17, where Jesus said, "If you love me, feed my sheep." This has been our motto since the beginning for 33 years. Every week, when our patrons dine with us, they are greeted by smiling faces, a meal, a preaching, and a personal prayer. They are not only patrons to me and my family, but throughout the years, they have become family. Out of this facility, multiple Bibles are provided and shipped to prisoner all over this great state of Texas when they request for one. Not only do the locals depend on this ministry, but our prison outreach depends on us as well. There are a lot of people who love this big blue building, and now the big blue building needs some tender, loving care. Help us restore and renew our building so that we can continue our mission. Midland, Odessa, and surrounding areas have never let us down. You have always come through when we needed your help. We believe God will touch many hearts to donate so that we may reach our goal. Thank you, and may God bless you. Nancy Ivy is the Executive Director of Midland Soup Kitchen Ministry. Commentary. We should eliminate all flaring, venting by 2025. By Gene Collins and Cyrus Reed. Even months after the coronavirus arrived in the United States, communities across the country, and especially in vulnerable areas of Texas, such as the Rio Grande Valley and the Permian Basin, are still suffering from severe impacts of this respiratory pandemic. We know for a fact that Black, Indigenous, and people of color are suffering the most from this viral illness due to continued lack of testing and resources. and increasing air pollution will only make a respiratory pandemic worse. Chronic air pollution spewed by the oil and gas industry, lax regulations, and pitiful enforcement by our state and federal agencies are compounding these dire circumstances for low-income and communities of color. To make matters worse, a proposal on new flaring reporting requirements by the Railroad Commission of Texas, RRC, which regulates oil and gas in Texas, falls dangerously short of the protections needed, all while the Trump administration also rolled out two new rules that undercut what little protections we do have from oil and gas air emissions in Texas. According to the Environmental Defense Fund's EDF Permian map, which depicts aerial observations of methane emissions in the Permian Basin, 11% of flares in the study area were malfunctioning, and 5% of the flares were completely unlit, or venting. Many of us know that flaring is dangerous. Venting is even worse. Venting unburned methane, volatile organic compounds, and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons are toxic for human health and the environment. These pollutants exacerbate climate change, contribute to ground-level ozone formation, cause cancer, and aggravate respiratory conditions such as asthma. Addressing these emission sources is even more urgent now because some of the deadliest symptoms of COVID-19 include respiratory complications. The Permian map study shows that there are only a couple of air monitors in the Midland-Odessa area and none in areas like Reeves County. Most of the counties observed in the EDF's Permian map have black, indigenous, and people of color populations greater than the national average, with five of the counties ranking in the top 30 in the nation for high incidences of asthma attacks in children linked to oil and gas production. This is a clear example of how environmental racism is a major public health issue, because communities of color are disproportionately impacted by air pollution in the United States, and as a result experience increasingly high rates of respiratory illness of asthma. Nationally, people of color make up the largest portion of COVID-related hospitalizations. This is a direct result of systemic racism, and industrial air pollution is compounding risks for many communities of color. Just this month, a new environmental public health study published in Environment Health Perspectives of Flaring in South Texas found a prevailing threat for pregnant women who live near the areas where flaring is common. Pregnant women who were exposed to 10 or more flares over the course of pregnancy had a 50% higher rate of giving birth prematurely, with the impact of flaring falling almost entirely on Latinx mothers and caretakers. Right now, while average Americans have only received an inadequate one-time stimulus check for $1,200, the oil and gas industry is asking for multi-billion-dollar bailouts and weaker regulatory standards, and the administration is haphazardly allowing it. U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Andrew Wheeler just finalized new weaker regulations that will roll back leak detection and repair standards for the oil and gas sector, as well as other related standards, allowing significantly more methane and other air pollutants to contaminate our air. Expect future lawsuits on the issue. As the federal government actively weakens standards, Texans are hoping that the state government will step in to help and that the RRC will act to reduce flaring and venting. Predictably, they have been doing the exact opposite. Over the last 10 years, the commission charged with regulating oil and gas has increased the number of permits that allow companies to flare by tenfold, granting about 7,000 permits in 2019. In fact, the commission recently unveiled a proposal that would only increase reporting requirements for those companies that seek permission to vent and flare, but does not directly address the flaring and venting itself. Comments on their proposal are due by September 4, but already many organizations and legislators are complaining that the proposal does too little. Commissioners have not responded to community demands to set overall gas capture goals or other requirements to lower emissions. Other states, like New Mexico, are proposing much more. Better reporting is needed, but it does nothing to actually reduce the climate and health impacts that are burdening communities throughout South and West Texas. Similarly, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality has done nothing to consider statewide rules on methane capture beyond existing, now weakened, federal requirements despite community demands. We can and must do better. The Railroad Commission should set a policy to eliminate all flaring and venting by 2025, and the TCEQ should add pollution control requirements on oil and gas wells and require quarterly inspections of oil and gas facilities to discover and eliminate any methane leaks. As the leading oil and gas producer, Texas should be a leader in protecting our health, environment, and the preservation of its most vulnerable communities. Jean Collins is the Environmental Justice Chair for the Texas NAACP and lives in Odessa. Cyrus Reed is the Interim Director of the Lone Star Chapter of the Sierra Club.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Gout Pain. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 71-year-old woman recently diagnosed with gout. I have been put on colchicine and allopurinol. Are these the best medications? Will it ever go away? I have it in my right foot, but I worry about my left foot. Why the feet? I don't drink. What kind of diet would you suggest? BB. Answer. Gout is a disease that's been known for centuries. It is caused by deposition of crystals of monosodium urate into areas of the body, especially the joints. A high blood uric acid level is necessary for developing gout, but most people with high uric acid levels don't develop gout. Gout tends to form in the feet because the feet are cooler than most of the body. Lower temperatures favor formation of crystals. Gout can also form in soft tissues of the body, especially the hands and ears, where it is called tophaceous gout. Diet is important in people with gout. Alcohol use can bring on a gouty attack. Eating large amounts of animal protein, both meat and fish, especially shellfish, increases the risk of a gout attack as well. Sugar-sweetened beverages with fructose should be avoided. However, drastic changes in the diet are generally neither required nor helpful. Losing weight, if overweight, can have a significant improvement in the frequency of gout attacks. Most people with gout have periodic flares, and treatment is aimed at reducing their frequency. Allopurinol reduces uric acid level in the blood and is a standard and effective treatment for people with gout. However, allopurinol and similar medicines can worsen gout attacks when first started, and a second medicine, such as colchicine, is often begun at the same time to treat the current flare and prevent future ones.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading Dear Abby for Wednesday, September 2nd, 2020. Toddler uses foul language learned from dad. Dear Abby, although he has never hit me, my husband has been emotionally and verbally abusive ever since our wedding 5 years ago. One of his favorite names for me when he's angry is FNB. I know this is my fault because I have tolerated it. Today, my 2.5-year-old daughter, who is usually a good girl, threw a tantrum and called me the same name twice. I try to discipline her, but she doesn't understand that she's saying something bad if daddy can call me that. How can she? He blames me for talking that way, saying he hasn't called me that in a month. He called me that last week. I don't use that language. I have suggested using marriage counseling in the past, but he refused. I can't leave him because I am 7 months pregnant with our second child. How do I get both of them to respect me? Disrespected in the East. Dear Disrespected, you know that appointment you wanted to make for you and your husband with a licensed marriage and family therapist? Make one for yourself, right now, because what's going on isn't healthy for you or your little girl. Your husband demeans you because from the moment you married him, you have allowed it. Your 2-year-old isn't being disrespectful when she calls you what her father does. Children her age want attention, and they are mimics. Please do as I'm suggesting before you conceive a third child. From your description of your relationship with your husband, his verbal abuse and the disrespect it conveys will be an example for your children that will follow them into adulthood. Dear Abby, I am a 37-year-old mother of two, ages 9 and 11. My husband and I built a beautiful life together. We live in close proximity to his family, whom I absolutely love. My question involves my own family. My father passed away 2.5 years ago. We were very close, so it's been an ongoing struggle for me. My mother has since disowned me and my children. She's a textbook narcissist who has said many very hurtful things and has a new man and new life. Our relationship was always strained, and I knew it wouldn't be the same without Dad, because he was the glue. I have come to terms with this for myself, but we haven't talked to our children about it. How do I explain to them that their grandma doesn't want to be a part of their life? They love her and ask about her often, so I keep making stuff up. She won't answer phone calls from me or my husband. I believe she has us blocked. She has also blocked us on social media, along with other family members. I want my kids to know the truth, but I don't want to hurt them. How can I do this? Motherless in Ohio. Dear Motherless, stick as close to the truth as you can, with some editing. If your children ask about their grandmother, explain that people deal with the death of a loved one in different ways. In your mother's case, she needed to look forward and not look back. Because your grandfather's death was so painful, she is concentrating on things other than family, and although we might miss her, we should be comforted that she has found a way to cope. It may not be what we would have wished, but it is her way, and we have to respect it and go on with our lives. Horoscopes for Wednesday, September 2nd, 2020. Honest and unpretentious, you're not big on frills. You have an inner code of honor that shouldn't be crossed. This year, you succeed tremendously well with a project that has been put on hold for a time. If single, you're particular and would rather settle for nothing than compromise on your expectations. If attached, you're as committed as you can be, but need to be less of a workaholic. Virgo thinks you're demanding. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21st through April 19th. 3 stars. You have the inclination to withdraw from public view today. Give yourself a break when it comes to producing. Your energy might feel lower and you need to rest. Your challenge today is to be independent without feeling isolated. Tonight, spoil yourself. Taurus, April 20th through May 20th, 2 stars. You tend to be aggressive today in dealing with people in groups. If there is a discussion over a contract, you challenge others and can be combative in your position. Calm down and take deep breaths before you speak. Tonight, dinner with friends. Gemini, May 21st through June 20th, 4 stars. You are feeling ambitious, pushing ahead in your career on an ordinary day. You have got your eye on a promotion or landing a new client. Strut yourself. You are aiming high, shooting for the moon, so to speak. Tonight, conference calls first. Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd, 3 stars. You might be feeling restless, planning an escape from the routine. In your correspondence, a flirtation with a foreign-born person could go deeper. Are you ready to follow through, or do you just like the initiation of romance? Tonight, explore a new language. Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd, 4 stars. You are a searcher and a seeker of truth today. You want to launch a journey into the unknown. Reap what you have sown related to your interest in higher education or long-distance travel, including space travel. Tonight, add more fun to the moment. Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd, 5 stars. It is a good day to take a chance and experiment. Emphasize what you love and who you love. Partnership is emphasized. So are your creative talents. Pleasure and fun are plentiful. Express your joy. Tonight, an intimate dinner with your most loved one. Libra, September 23rd through October 22nd, 3 stars. You might be feeling emotionally repressed today. Utilize this feeling to clear up unfinished tasks, your desk, and workspace of clutter. Complete a project that has been on the back burner for way too long. Pets play a role now. Tonight, rest. Scorpio, October 23rd through November 21st, 5 stars. You are on center stage today. Live, laugh, love, and celebrate. Be wild, imaginative, and flaunt yourself. Children play a very important role in your afternoon. Create adventures and games for them to play. Tonight, be the person you always imagined you might be. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st, 3 stars. You are thinking very much of home today and where you really belong. You can expect some misunderstandings and confusion related to your domestic scene. Pitch in and help around the house more. Tonight, communicate directly, especially with family members. Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th, 4 stars. An opportunity comes your way related to your community and neighbors. Be the leader you were born to be. You communicate well and use an unusual approach. Your mental activity might be operating on overdrive, so speak more slowly. Tonight, express your caring nature. Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th, 4 stars. Today you are feeling highly sensual and also very opinionated. There might be a tendency to be somewhat fixed in your thoughts. Avoid any stubborn behavior. It is a good time for gardening, cultivating ideas, and going over your accounts. Tonight, early bedtime. Pisces, February 19th through March 20th, 5 stars. Today is your day. Think big and act big on your ideas and goals. Unexpected resources will arrive, causing you to feel very fortunate. You have a chance to expand, to gain recognition, even fame and power. Tonight, count your many blessings.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.